Hello, everybody, and good early morning to you. 4:05. But that's what it's like when the work is calling. So we have just finished number 55, and we read from the old commentary about the three lights. I'd like to read this once again. About the light in which we see light and so forth. Very ancient origin. It's so old and so abstruse that it's only possible now, only now possible to bring it to the attention of humanity owing to the increased spiritual and mental perception of the modern aspirant. It can be inadequately translated as follows. First type of light. And I've gone over this in number 55, but I thought it would be a good method to remind us of what was said as we work now in program number 56. The light is seen, a tiny point of piercing light. The light is warm and red. It nearer draws as it reveals the things that are. The things which may be. It pierces the third center and removes all glamour and desire. So this is the light which reveals the ordinary things of life and which eventually rids us of the distortions, the false attractions to glamour. Now here is the second light, and it's an important one because, as we'll see, it's the light that the Buddha and the Christ have been wielding. Excuse me. A light is seen through the medium of the lower light. You know, in that light we shall see light. A light of warmth and heat. It's not so much the red, it's warmth and heat. And notice the center of the heart is mentioned. It pierces to the heart. And in that light, all forms are seen pervading, pervaded by a glowing light. I think this is a light which we do not readily see just yet. The world of lighted forms is now perceived. Linked each to each by light. That's what we perhaps do not see. The light is blue. Notice we've moved from red, the solar plexus, to the blue of the heart. And flaming in its nature. Between the warm and reddish light and this clear light, but not yet called the clear cold light, interestingly, although I think it has some of that in it. There burns a glow of flame, the connection between these two centers, a flame which must be entered ere the blue light is entered and is used, the light of the heart. So this is an important type of light, and you would think perhaps it was the clear cold light, but that seems to be reserved for the next paragraph. And usually the clear cold light is not understood as the light which utterly blots out all form and hides all difference, but in this particular case, these abstruse ancient paragraphs, perhaps it is so. Another light is then perceived. The clear cold light, which is not light, but darkness in its purest purity. Well, usually, you know, the clear cold light is reserved for the Bodhi and the dark light for Shambhala. Two planes higher and three planes higher. This is the light of God Himself, and it is called the clear cold light. Well, you know, Shambhala has four levels, and the Buddhic plane is included. It renders dark all else beside itself. You know, just go to rule five or rule nine for disciples and initiates. It renders dark all else besides itself. All forms fade out. And yet the whole of life is there. Somehow all these particulars are included in this light. It is not light as we know light. It is the pure essential essence of that light, which reveals itself through light. And notice the varying capitalization. So here we are, I think, in a position to move on to number 56. It was the second light to which the Buddha and the Christ both referred when they said, I am the light of the world. I think in the West we're more used to hearing Christ say that, but apparently the Buddha has said that too, and certainly he was and is the Lord of light and the Lord of wisdom. It is the light of God himself, the Lord of the worlds. I suppose Sanatkumara in this instance, in which the lives within the council chamber of Shambhala live and move and have their being. And, this is a very high description of this second light. Whoops, that's not what we want. Okay, so, although, well, why is this happening? I'm supposed to be able to, just a moment. So, and I think that's a good one to put in. By now you're used to me doing this. Hope it doesn't disturb you too much. So, although we are dealing with Shambhala and the monad, still, somehow, the second light is referenced and not the third, and it is called the light of God. And you would think it would be the highest form of light, but, that's why perhaps this is considered to be relatively abstruse. It is the light of God himself, the Lord of the worlds, in which the lives within the council chamber of Shambhala live and move and have their being, the lights which carry out the will of God, as found in, Rule 6 or Rule 7 for disciples and initiates. It is the recognition of the varying lights upon the lighted way that signifies readiness for initiation, or you might say for the next imminent initiation. The initiate enters into light in a peculiar sense. Okay, it permeates his nature according to his development at any point in time and space. So we might say that different, let's use that one, DFT. And we'll call it different. Different lights or lights permeate the nature according to the degree taken. It enables him to contact and see the hitherto unseen. That's what light does, Light reveals that which was hitherto unseen. And on the basis of the newly acquired knowledge, to direct his steps still further. And why? Because he could not direct his steps because he was blind to the new possibilities which the light has revealed. Usually the lowest form of light, we're just leaving it as a lowercase L. And I suppose, if we really wanted to graduate these terms, we would use a lowercase L, then a capital L, and then the entire word light would be capitalized. But that's still a crude method, as there are so many different types of light or vibration that will be encountered. Increasingly rapid revelatory vibration is encountered at higher, at higher and higher points of tension. And those are those pots, right? Okay, I think it's important, POTS, points of tension. And POT, point of tension. That's the method of revelation. DK tells us, and when we manage to live at a sufficient point of tension, we can penetrate in just a short time, maybe a few minutes or a few hours, what otherwise might take us years. So that's astonishing and calls upon us to increase our capacity to increase the point of tension. I'm not here speaking in symbols. Okay, so this is, let's just say that in this case, and we'll put that in this case, light is light, and light is light. And we're not dealing with light as a symbol. Each initiation dims the light already acquired and used, and then immerses the initiate in a higher light. Well, can we still see? Can we still see in the lesser light? And I would say as necessary. Probably. Okay, probably, B-R-B-Y-L. Each initiation enables the disciple to perceive an area of divine consciousness hitherto unknown, but which, when the disciple has familiarized himself with it, and with its unique phenomena, vibratory quality, and interrelations, becomes the normal field of experience and activity. So we're always going to see more and more, and you might say we gradually become accustomed to the to that which a greater light reveals, and the field of revelation becomes for us normal and habitual until we begin to outgrow it, because we have learned what there is to learn in this new revelation, and because we are spirit, we are the ultimate, ultimately, we always quest for more and greater revelation until the day comes post-pralaically, you might say, when the absoluteness which we are is revealed to us as the to us the absolute deity. Thus, if I may so express it, the worlds of living forms and formless lives become his own, and this is all gradually. This is not yet the case for us, but increasingly for the masters, it is. Again, duality enters into his mental perception, for he is now aware of the lighted area from which he comes. And certainly when the masters look back and they see what we're doing, it is an area from which they come. He's now aware of the lighted area from which he comes to the point of tension or of initiation, and through the initiatory process he discovers a new and more brilliantly lighted area into which he may enter. So basically what DK is doing here, you know, there are many ways to describe initiation, ways to describe initiation, and here MDK is doing it in terms of light. And I think this is a very important way. I mean, the love quality is there and the will quality is there, but I think initially, because we are more related perhaps to the intelligence aspect in our present state of development, the description of initiation in terms of light is very useful, and it is initial. Again, duality enters into his mental perception, for he is now aware of the lighted area from which he comes, and of course he sees its limitations. And he begins to realize that he was in relatively a darkened room. There are many darkened rooms along the way. You enter into each new area of light, and eventually it becomes a darkened room as the spirit begins to strain towards further revelation, which it senses is always there, but which it does not yet have the equipment to register. And through the initiatory process, you know, working on his own, and also having his work confirmed by the initiator, whoever that initiator may be, he discovers a new and more brilliantly lighted area. You wonder, you know, if there is, it occurs to me in this manner, if you have infinite light, do you have absolute darkness? And I don't think I can really answer that except to say that this particular question does occur to me. You know, obviously here in universe, as it were, we are not in the ever-recurring post-pralayic, post-maha-pralayic state. Although you kind of wonder, you know, why that state certainly has to exist. So in a way, it's immutable. And in a way, we're ever in it, even though periodically we're not in it. So there are many paradoxes as we consider the universal cycle. And DK speaks, you know, of the many paradoxes of the occult path. So this involves, whatever we just discussed here, no leaving of the former field of activity in which he has worked and lived. It's just the way, in a way, you know, that having the universe come forth on the ray of the absolute and so forth, in a way requires no leaving of absoluteness, whichever is immutable and absolutely infinite. Paradox. This involves no leaving of the former field of activity in which he has worked and lived. It simply means that new fields of responsibility and opportunity confront him because he is, through his own effort, note that, you know, because the initiate is self-made in many ways, though confirmed by an initiator, able to see more light and to walk in a greater light, to prove more adequately than heretofore his capacities within the greatly increased area of possibility. I think it's so brilliant. The way Master DK discusses the normality of initiation, it's devoid of all that kind of egocentric glamour by means of which initiation is so frequently described. So he doesn't leave. It simply means that new fields of responsibility and of opportunity confront him. I'll just leave it at that, and then the description follows. So always, you know, we are looking forward always in universe, and that IU is what I use for in universe, in dash universe, always looking forward in universe for greater areas of light and thus greater possibilities for expression. The scope of which greatly increases. So there's something in us that, you know, just wants to keep growing, even though we're everything that is. But we're growing out of our myopic or illusory limitations. If we seem to have limitations, as we definitely do in the great Mahamaya of the universe, it is essentially an illusion. We are, as absolute being, absolutely unlimited. But we have chosen and we have narrowed the field until we become apparently individual and limited. And this is the ongoing story, and why it should be is certainly going to be impossible for us to say when we are in this in-universe condition. I often think, you know, that no matter what being it is, even the universal logos, trying to understand the mystery of how it came into being as a limited being, will be confronted with the impossibility of doing so. Because every being, no matter how vast, is limited, you know, in an in-universe way, and is really, when compared with absolute infinitude, an infinitesimal, and even the absolute infinitesimal. But that gets on into some of that third ray kind of thought that I'm trying to develop in other places. But it still underlies, you know, my thought and my interpretations when confronted with what Master DK says. Though, you know, I think we better stick to the second ray here in order to try to reveal what he's saying in a coherent manner. Initiation is therefore a constant fusion of the lights. Brilliant, brilliant. Progressively entered, thus enabling the initiate to see further and deeper and more inclusively. I just love this. I've never seen so many marvelous definitions of initiation from perspectives which are so illuminating. As one of the masters has said, the light must enter vertically and be diffused or radiated horizontally. And you might say, I think we can picture this. All light newly acquired must be shared horizontally with a certain field of expression. This creates the cross of service upon which the disciple is pendant until the cross of Sanat Kumara is revealed to him. Now, the cross of service, you know, this could be considered the FXC, and that's one we want. And we call this the fixed cross. Sanat Kumara is on the cardinal cross, but there have to be many, many crosses as we do ascend. The cross of Sanat Kumara. So let's say, is this the cardinal cross? Let's call it CCX. Or maybe, well, okay, CCX. That's a good one, I think. Cardinal cross. CCX. Okay, that's good. Is this the cardinal cross that Sanat Kumara is on? Of course, it's still a cross of great service. But what we normally call service in the human terms is handled on the cross of the soul, which is the fixed cross. He knows then why this planet, for wise and adequate reasons, is the planet of distress, dispassion, and detachment. Fascinating. And these reasons are understood eventually in the light of the solar logoses in intentions. I'm sorry. Planet of distress, dispassion, and detachment. Well, we are, what do they call, you know, graduates of painful endeavor, adjudicators between the pairs of opposites. We're on a planet of purifying pain and releasing sorrow and purifying pain. I always have trouble remembering that, except there's two P's in it, purifying pain. Then the sorrow comes naturally, releasing sorrow. So maybe we don't understand that yet, and certainly it's not within the field of thought of the average individual. Occultism is so wonderful in that way, because it gives you the reason why, you know. Ever since I was a kid, I was asking why, you know. For what purpose, why is that, etc., and no one could answer, but then eventually one finds those who can answer, and one finds that within oneself which does answer. The planet of distress, dispassion, and detachment. You kind of, you know, when you look at that, you know, I mean, how should we do this? BDH. Is that, that's Buddhic. No, that's it. We want, let's say BDA. That one ought to be all right. BDA, and that'll be the Buddha, although maybe he could be easily spelled out without a problem. BUDDHA. How many D's can there be? This is when I know it's early in the morning. Okay. BDA. Don't you see the Buddha in this triple description? When he knows this, he knows that all our planetary life, he knows all that our planetary life can reveal to him. Now, do we mean... I'm sorry. That's always the case. I forget to get that in there. Does he mean the planetary scheme or our particular globe, which has a dense physical body. All right, and there's another one we're going to want. Okay, Divine Plan and DPB, dense physical body. Interesting about that dense physical body, you know, it has 18 subplanes to it. It's not just what we consider to be the dense physical body. So the astral plane and the lower mental plane are all part of that dense physical body. He has transmuted knowledge into wisdom. You might say he is ready to be a graduate of Earth, or at least of this particular globe. He is ready to be a graduate of Earth or of this particular globe. What does it take to be a graduate of the entire planetary scheme, as there are these higher and higher globes, but then the formation of globes and there's just much to be studied in what we might call the superimposition of globes, the superimposition of the various vehicles of globes. They all seem to be in the diagram spread out in such a way that there are many different independent fields. I think they are independent fields, but I think they are superimposed. So I just want to recommend, let us find a way to study the superimposition of globes and chains and the vehicles or fields found in relation to these globes and chains. I think that's a very much blinded area, and we've been given diagrams which sort of help us differentiate, but I don't think that they show us the way a planet really functions. I don't imagine that, at least at this time, spread out in space are all these different, spatially separated chains and globes. The superimposition and the sort of the vibratory polarization, superimposition I think exists, and the vibratory rates, and maybe something about the polarization of that which vibrates separates one field from another, and so makes the fields articulate, but not necessarily spread out in space the way the diagram seems to suggest. But okay, I don't know for sure, and this will be discovered as we go along, because I think somewhere it is hinted that these are secrets of the higher initiations. When you want to see that, and how often the inquiring mind of man can ask about secrets of initiations that are way beyond them, just read the correspondence between Master K.H. and Sinnott. Is it A.P. Sinnott? But Sinnott, anyway, who was apparently dialoguing with him, and I think those, some of those early theosophical writings, the master is frequently saying, well, you're asking a question that pertains to the sixth initiation, so I can't really say anything about it. But as we go along, new revelation will come. We live in the expectation of ever new revelation. And when we have any kind of religion or system of thought which tells you that that's all that can be revealed forever, you know you're dealing with the starkest kind of illusion, and that particular illusion has to absolutely be broken before the adherence of that religion can really progress. It is at the center of this cross of service that the point of fusion and the point of tension must be found. So in service, we acquire a greater and greater fusion and more intense points of tension. For the moment, I'm just considering this to be the fixed cross, the cross of service. It's so much about the common cross and the mutable cross that are the same, that it's all about acquiring experience. But and of course we continue to acquire experience on the various crosses, but we're not very illumined as we go through the many millions of years on the mutable cross. By the time we get to the fixed cross, it's really a much shorter duration. We are realizing ourselves to be the soul, and we are serving. So it's at this, at the center of this cross of service, that the point of fusion, I suppose, of we might say, of soul and personality, and the point of tension, the intensity of focus, the intensity of the focus consciousness, must be found. The point of fusion is created by the focusing of all the power, aims, and desires of the disciple dynamically upon the mental plane. And you might say, are we then awaiting the added light of the soul? And I think we have light of the soul, added light of the soul. Are we then awaiting that? The point of tension is created by the invocative power of this focal point, when the invocative power of this focal point becomes capable of evoking response from that which is invoked. This is very occult and very necessary. Mary Bailey always used to say, well, you know, the rays and the initiations, that's my Bible. And some of us, you know, we were the younger students, and maybe we didn't know why. But now that I'm of the age that she was when she was saying that, I guess I increasingly know why. The point of tension is created when the invocative power of the focal point, so what have we got here, becomes invocative. Let's just say that, we'll say that focus creates, it creates a kind of intensity on the mental plane, and when this focus is sufficiently intense and can evoke that which is above it, then the focus can be called a point of tension. And I see that I've done a disservice to the light of the soul, and we'll have an I instead of an L, light of the soul. Okay. Yes, we'll autocorrect that. For the average aspirant and for the disciple, this is either the soul light, the soul of the spiritual pride. In other words, what is being invoked for the average disciple is soul light or the light of the spiritual triad. The meeting of the two focused energies produces a point of tension. And for the disciple, this is either the soul, the meeting of the two, and I suppose triadal and soul energies meeting, soul energies meeting and affecting the created focal point creates a legitimate point of tension. Just mild focusing is not going to do it. I can focus, well, sort of in a low-level manner. Without much intensity, it's not really a point of tension. Disciples should not focus their attention upon the task of producing a point of tension. And this is so important. It's such amazing material, such wisdom, such good advice. They should remember the dual life of activity, i.e. that which he is at any given moment of endeavor, and that with which he can fuse and blend this sum total of his achieved development. So it's we must remember the duality and move from what we are to what we can be, putting it that way. They should remember the dual life of activity, i.e. that which he is at any given moment of endeavor, and that with which he can fuse and blend this sum total of development. So it's not like I want to be intense. It is bringing together all that we are. How did he describe it up here? All the power, aims, desires of the disciple dynamically upon the mental plane. And we might say dynamically upon the mental plane, we might say in terms of what we are, as discussed below. Okay. Another point of tension is created when the invocative power of this focal point, you know, becomes sufficiently intense so that it can evoke the attention of the greater. The tension of the lower evokes the attention of the greater. A response is invoked, and then it's really a point of tension, not just a point of mild focusing. There has to be great aspiration and yearning in it also, at least at certain stages. For the average aspirant and for the disciple, this is either the soul or the spiritual triad, which is being invoked. The meeting of the two focused energies produces a point of tension. Now, what are the two? Another way of looking at this is that another way of looking at the two is the soul and the focused energies, or the spiritual triad and the focused energies. and there is a way, you know, as the charts show us, that soul and triadal energies do come together. I wonder if I could find that without spending a whole lot of time or turning off the Well, let's see if I go over here and AAB diagram somewhere, please. Yes. Okay, and this would be number 8. And I open this. Yeah. So as we can see from the lines, there are definitely ways in which the spiritual triad connects with the main structures within what we normally call the soul, the causal body, the egoic lotus. Those red lines, those blue lines, those green lines, you know. The colors do help us here, and some of those who have been, you know, working on the Tibetan charts, like Keith Paley and also Tuya, my wife, have added the colors, and they help to direct the consciousness into greater understanding. In the Cosmic Fire book, the colors aren't really there, and so we're not understanding so much about the directions of the first, second, and third aspects. So we probably can divine what they are. The colors do help. All right, so where are we? We are here. So disciples should not focus attention upon the task of producing a point of attention. They should instead, focus all the power, aims, and desires. They should instead, focus power, aims, desires, and should realize the state in which they are. They should realize, they should remember the life of dual activity, i.e. that which he is at any given moment of endeavor, you know, according to the power, the aims, and the desires, because that pretty well tells you what you are. I've often thought, you know, measure a person's desires and you know who they are and what they are. That which he is at any given moment of endeavor, and that with which he can fuse and blend the sum total of his achieved development. So we do want to know, what is our achieved development? You know, and it's hard sometimes for us to see ourselves. Excuse me. To get a really objective point of view, because, you know, the context which we can embrace is limited. And you really only see what you are within the larger context, ever larger context. You see more and more what you are. Or we might say that you see, always see what you are within a particular context. But our context is pretty small now. So we, you know, get used to being kind of a human being going through the daily round and doing various things, but from a larger perspective, we're going to look much different. The potency of his thinking along these dual lines will automatically produce the point of tension through the medium of the fusion of the appropriate dualities, what do you say, what he is and the higher source he is using or relating to, whether soul, spiritual triad, or monad, or later, still greater things. This is so instructive. You know, I sometimes feel as if I've never read it before. Well, it's also possible to think you've read quite a bit of the books and find that there are areas where that you've never read before. But anyway, the potency of his thinking along these dual lines, what he is and what he could be, and I'll put that in again just to remind what he is and what he could be, will automatically produce the point of tension through the medium of the fusion of the appropriate duality. So you have to get the get the sense of the difference between the present state and the possible state. We always have to look ahead to the possible, but be realistic about the present. Excuse me. It is through the activity of the lower mind that fusion with the soul is brought about, with successive intensifying points of tension. It is through the activity established between the higher and lower mind, I suppose with the lower mind at its highest possible point, fourth subplane, that fusion with the triad becomes possible, with points of tension arising at many points along the bridge. So, you know, we are at different points of focus and tension along the bridge, all of us different. It is through the activity of pure reason that fusion with the hierarchy becomes possible, and it is that which produces those points of tension we call initiations, and these particularly look like the higher initiations. There's so much that I want to underline there. It is through the activity of the lower mind that fusion with the soul is brought about, with successive points of tension, and you might almost say, different areas of the lower mind are like the different points of tension along the bridge. So different areas of the lower mind are like the different points of tension along the bridge spoken of below. It is through the activity established between the higher and lower mind that fusion with the spiritual triad becomes possible, with points of tension arising at many points along the bridge. It's a gradual approach, isn't it? And who knows exactly what the present point of tension is for any one of us, how it could be identified by those with the higher powers viewing us, the Antikarana. Okay. It is through the activity of pure reason that fusion with the hierarchy becomes possible. Now, how And it produces those points of tension which we call initiations. And what are they invoking? Still greater scope. Now, let's just say, using the Antikarana, we develop the ability to enter into pure reason, and thus approach the higher of the poles, which would be hierarchy, and take higher initiations. Okay. There are necessarily still higher points of tension, but it is with those called initiations that we are dealing at this time. So, you know, it's as if every initiation has an established point of tension, invokes a still greater revelation, because let's say we have a duality, you know. Let's see, we always have a duality. We always have a duality, and when that duality, higher and lower, are related rightly, a point of tension is produced. Now, the sense of what is the duality continues to ascend. You know, we are not high initiates, and probably our sense of duality here usually is in the mental body and invocative of the higher duality of the soul. Now, maybe some of us have been building the Antikarana for some time, but probably more likely we're really beginners. And along this, these points of tension in the Antikarana, the higher part of the duality can be the abstract mind or the buddhi, you know, or maybe spiritual will, depending on the type of initiate we are at the moment. So I hope this is comprehensible. It always involves duality and the interaction of a lower and a higher in the duality, and that interaction produces a point of tension. As the dualities sort of ascend like this, the point of tension increases. We are not to attempt to force the development of a point of tension, but are to realistically think about where we really are and that towards which we can legitimately reach, whether it is the soul of love on all the seven rays or whether it's the triadal expression in some respect as the personality of the monad, or the different aspects being different aspects of the triple monad. Those would be the two places that disciples of our type could focus. Light may enter your mind in this connection if you will constantly bear in mind the essential duality of manifested life. And we, you know, are becoming adjudicators between the pairs of opposites on this planet. So it's very important. We on this planet are becoming what's called adjudicators between the pairs of opposites. And that's another one we want. Pairs of opposites. Okay. So the negative and the positive poles present within the consciousness of every form, and the tension between them, creating the point of tension from which we can work. The point of tension is always higher than the lower of the pairs of opposites, and always lower than the higher of the pairs of opposites. But the point of tension can form the new lower, as it were, and we can reach still higher towards the higher member of the of a new pair of opposites. And I wonder if I did this, could I get a singular out of it? And a pair of opposites. Okay. Well, okay. The achieved point of fusion, the result of active and positive work and effort, is rendered negative to that which is being invoked. Okay, so we gathered what we are into a point of fusion, and by this means another and positive point of tension can be achieved. Okay, well, there's an ascent here, and we can work on how it does ascend. The achieved point of fusion is rendered negative, but a point of tension appears. It's my impression that the new point of tension eventually becomes the base of a, okay, it is my impression that a new point of tension becomes the base of a higher pair of opposites. Initiation, a dramatic and a major point of tension, connotes essentially the fusion of the negative and the positive aspects. There's so many different ways of looking at this, and he's giving us almost some of the, you might say, electrical terms. We seem to be entering into an electrical description of initiation. Owing to this, in all the initiatory processes, it is the will of the disciple which is active, and which produces, first of all, a fusion of what he has and is and where he stands, and as a consequence, the appearance of a point of tension, especially once the higher of the pairs of opposites is related to. We always have to have that relation with something higher. We always have to have a relation with something higher before a point of tension can be produced from what we have read. The fusion of the what did he call it? Powers and what did he call it? Okay. Powers, aims, and desires. Yeah. Let's see here. The fusion of the powers, aims, and desires is not in itself enough to produce an advancing point of tension. It is a point of focus in distinction, distinction to a point of tension. Okay, well, now we're going to go into an illustration of what he means, and you know, obviously, we're trying to understand this, and greater clarity will come. So this is going to be the end of Rays and Initiations webinar commentary number 56, and I'm sure we're on some page or other here. Okay, what are we on? 1, 2. Maybe I go backwards and see if I can find the page. I always There it is, 541. So it looks like 539 to 541. Is that possible? Just only covering a couple of pages? Well, I guess so. We're into 541 a bit. And now, just to try to keep this document clear, as pages 539 to 541, and the day is the 2nd of February, 17, and we'll begin a Raise and Initiation webinar commentary number 57, pages 541 to whatever. And this will probably also be 2nd February. Let's hope so. Let's hope so. Okay, friends. Well, it's fascinating. It requires reading and rereading. It requires incorporation, thinking this whole thing through, trying to find out where we really stand and what it is we're really reaching for, and having a sense of the qualities of what it is we're really reaching for. Because along the emanative line that we have descended upon, we retrace our steps, and that retracing of emanation is in a way a whole anti-Quranic process. Okay, so be it, and we'll be back before long. We have a lot of work to do to study, assimilate, and apply, progress, and serve. See you soon. Bye-bye.